one can have no smaller or greater mastery than mastery of oneself. Leonardo da Vinci. Welcome to Flourish. I'm Diane Planetan, and you're in the right place if you're ready to create inspired life and master your own life. Today, we continue through the best-selling book by Robert Greene called Mastery. And this is coming full circle because there's a deep connection between the laws of human nature, which he wrote, and mastery. And I love the fact that I actually read Laws of Human Nature first, and I'll put a link in the show notes to that review. But back to you. This is all about the apprenticeship stage and why it's important. Well, I'm not going to make something with my hands. What do I have to apprentice for? This is for anything and everybody in order to really hone your skills and make those connections. But what do? Well, it's a two-part process in this particular chapter. It's about the principles and the three steps, along with some great strategies on how to get there. So let's not delay any further. Here we go. The principle is simple and must be engraved deeply in your mind. The goal of an apprenticeship is not money, a good position, a title, or a diploma, but rather the transformation of your mind and character. The first transformation on your way to mastery. And following in the footsteps of Charles Darwin, you are finally on your own, on a voyage in which you will craft your own future. It is the time of youth and adventure, of exploring the world with an open mind and spirit. In fact, whenever you must learn a new skill or alter your career path later in life, you reconnect with that useful, adventurous part of yourself. The first principle on the transformation of mind and character. So what are these three steps? So based on this principle of transformation of mind and character in part one of this episode, step one is deep observation, the passive mode. What does he mean by that? You will be observing two essential realities in this new world. First, you will observe the rules and procedures that govern success in the environment. In other words, this is how we do things here. The second reality you will observe is the power of relationships that exist within groups. Who has real control? Through whom do all communications flow? Who is on the rise and who is on the decline? He says, you know, you start a new position and you think you have to prove yourself, get in there, get going. But the strategy is to actually make some observations, understand the politicking that's going on. And that's why I mentioned the laws of human nature, because there's a lot more complexities than just doing a good job. Every task you are given, no matter how menial, offers opportunities to observe this world at work. No detail about the people within it is too trivial. Everything you see or hear is a sign for you to decode. Not necessarily overthinking, but understand there are several critical reasons why you must follow this step. First, knowing your environment inside and out will help you navigating it and avoiding costly mistakes. You're like a hunter. Your knowledge of every detail of the forest and of the ecosystem as a whole will give you many more options for survival and success. Second, the ability to observe any unfamiliar environment will become a critical lifelong skill. You will develop a habit of stilling your ego and looking outward instead of inward. You will see in any encounter what most people miss because they're thinking of themselves. You will cultivate a keen eye for human psychology and strengthen your ability to focus. Finally, you will become accustomed to observing first, basing your ideas and theories on what you have seen with your eyes, and then analyzing what you find. This will be a very important skill for the next creative phase in life. Be observant, be curious, ask questions. When you're in the learning mode, It's really nice if you don't get caught up in the office politics. If you don't get caught up in who's in control, you observe and you learn. I love that. Number two, step two, skills acquisition, the practice mode. Practice toward the acquisition of skills. In acquiring any kind of skill, there exists a natural learning process that coincides with the functioning of our brain. The learning process leads to what we shall call tacit knowledge, a feeling for what you are doing that is hard to put into words, but easy to demonstrate in action. And to understand how this learning process operates, it is useful to look at the greatest system ever invented for the training of skills and the achievement of tacit knowledge, the apprenticeship system of the Middle Ages. So you might be thinking, what? Take 7 years to become a doctor. I want to make money now. But if you think about it and you slow down, a doctor, for example, is a very specialized field and then expands from there. So whatever you're going into, whatever you feel your purpose in life is, take your time, just like a doctor would, to hone their skills. And that was the timeline that was in the Middle Ages as well. 7 years. If you wanted to become a butcher, or a baker, a candlestick maker, it took time, observance, to really hone those skills. But he's not just talking about things you make with your hands. When you pass your apprenticeship, he says, after a term of 7 years. Okay. At the end of this term, the seven-year example, he says, apprentices would have to pass a master test or produce a master work to prove their level of skill. Once passed, they were now elevated to the rank of journeyman and could travel where there was work, practicing the craft. They had to learn how to focus deeply on their work and not make mistakes. And he gives an example in the book here about the Gothic cathedrals of Europe, masterpieces of beauty, craftsmanship, and stability, which were all erected without blueprints or books. These cathedrals represented the accumulated skills of numerous craftsmen and engineers. And you're like, what? How did they do that? Think about it for a moment. He says, what this means is simple. Language, oral and written, is a relatively recent invention. Well before that time, our ancestors had to learn various skills, toolmaking, hunting, and so forth. The natural model for learning, largely based on the power of mirror neurons, came from watching and imitating others, then repeating the action over and over. Our brains are highly suited for this form of learning. It's how you learn to walk, talk, ride a bicycle. You can't read about how to ride a bicycle. The more we do it, the easier it becomes. Even with skills that are primarily mental, such as computer programming or speaking a foreign language, it remains the case that we learn best through practice and repetition, the natural learning process. And once you've taken this far enough, you enter a cycle of accelerated returns in which the practice becomes easier and more interesting, leading to the ability to practice for longer hours. First, it is essential that you begin with one skill that you can master and that serves as a foundation for acquiring others. You must avoid at all costs the idea you can manage learning several skills at a time. You need to develop your powers of concentration and understand that trying to multitask will be the death of the process. Second, the initial stages of learning a skill invariably involve tedium. Yet rather than avoiding this inevitable tedium, you must accept and embrace it. The pain and boredom we experience in the initial stage of learning a skill toughens our minds, much like physical exercise. You will learn how to focus and move past the boredom, or like a child, you will succumb to the need for immediate pleasure and distraction. You must meet any boredom head on and not try to avoid or repress it. Once something is repeated often enough, it becomes hardwired and automatic, and the neural pathways for this skill are delegated to other parts of the brain, farther down the cortex. Those neurons in the frontal cortex that we need in the initial stages are now freed up to help in learning something else, and the area goes back to its normal size. And he gives a really helpful tip here. He says, it is better to dedicate 2 or 3 hours of intense focus to a skill than to spend 8 hours of diffused concentration on it. You want it to be as immediately present to what you are doing as possible. Once an action becomes automatic, you now have the mental space to observe yourself as you practice. Trying something over and over again grounds you in reality, making you deeply aware of your inadequacies and what you can accomplish with more work and effort. If you take this far enough, you will naturally enter the cycle of accelerated returns. As you learn and gain skills, you can begin to vary what you do, finding nuances that you can develop in the work so it becomes more interesting. As the cycle accelerates, you can reach a point where your mind is totally absorbed in the practice, entering a kind of flow in which everything else is blocked out. You become one with the tool or instrument or thing that you are studying. Your skill is not something that can be put into words. It is embedded in your body and nervous system. It becomes tacit knowledge. Learning any kind of skill deeply prepares you for mastery. The sensation of flow, of being part of the instrument, is a precursor to the great pleasures that mastery can bring. And he says, real pleasure comes from overcoming challenges, feeling confidence in your abilities, gaining fluency in skills, and experiencing the power this brings. You develop patience. In other words, concentrated practice over time cannot fail, but produce results. Concentrated practice over time cannot fail, but produce results. And then step three in transforming your mind and character, the active mode. This is where you move to a more active mode of experimentation. You are observing yourself in action and seeing how you respond to the judgments of others. Most people wait too long to take this step, generally out of fear. It is always easier to learn the rules and stay within your comfort zone. Often you must force yourself to initiate such actions or experiments before you think you are ready. You are testing your character, moving past your fears, and developing a sense of detachment to your work, looking at it through the eyes of others. You will know when your apprenticeship is over by the feeling that you have nothing left to learn in this environment. It's time to declare your independence or move to another place to continue your apprenticeship and expand your skill base. Later in life, when you are confronted with a career change or need to learn new skills, having gone through this process before, it will become second nature. You have learned how to learn. Many people might find the notion of an apprenticeship and skill acquisition a quaint relic of bygone eras when work meant making things. After all, we have entered the information and computer age in which technology makes it so we can do without the kinds of menial tasks that require practice and repetition. So many things have become virtual in our lives, making the craftsman model obsolete, or so the argument goes. In truth, however, and if you're into the whole AI thing going on right now, listen to this. This idea of the nature of times you are living in is completely incorrect, even dangerous. The era we have entered is not one in which technology will make everything easier, but rather of time of increased complexity that affects every field. In business, competition has become globalized and more intense. A business person must have a command of a much larger picture than in the past, which means more knowledge and skills. The future in science does not lie in increased specialization, but rather in the combining and cross-fertilization of knowledge in various fields. In the arts, tastes and style are changing at an accelerated rate. An artist must be on top of this and be capable of creating new forms, always remaining ahead of the curve. This often requires having more than just a specialized knowledge of that particular art form. It requires knowing other arts, even the sciences, and what is happening in the world. In all of these areas, the human brain is asked to do and handle more than ever before. We are dealing with several fields of knowledge constantly intersecting with our own, and all of this chaos is exponentially increased by the information available through technology. What this means is that all of us must possess different forms of knowledge and an array of skills in different fields and have minds that are capable of organizing large amounts of information. The future belongs to those who learn more skills and combine them in creative ways. And the process of learning skills, no matter how virtual, remains the same. But how do you do that? Well, he has some strategies about the apprenticeship. And this is part two of the episode. So thank you for hanging in there. And if you like the show, well, give us a thumbs up. He begins this section with a quote from Marcus Aurelius. "Do not think that what is hard for you to master is humanly impossible. And if it is humanly possible, consider it to be within your reach." I love that. The first strategy is value learning over money. That's a tough one. He says, it's a simple law of human psychology that your thoughts will tend to revolve around what you value most. If it is money, you will choose a place for your apprenticeship that offers the biggest paycheck. Inevitably, in such a place, you will feel a great pressure to prove yourself worthy of such pay. Often before you are really ready, you will be focused on yourself, your insecurities, the need to please and impress the right people, and not acquire skills. Strategy number two, keep expanding your horizons. I love that. If you desire an apprenticeship, if you want to learn and set yourself up for mastery, you have to do it yourself with great energy. Continually work to expand your horizons. How do you do that? Reading books and materials that go beyond what is required is always a good starting point. Being exposed to ideas in the wild world, you will tend to develop a hunger for more and more knowledge. You will find it harder to remain satisfied in any narrow corner, which is precisely the point. Be relentless in your pursuit for expansion. Whenever you feel like you're settling into some circle, force yourself to shake things up and look for new challenges. With your mind expanding, you will redefine the limits of your apparent world. Soon, ideas and opportunities will come to you, and your apprenticeship will naturally complete itself. You have to set yourself up for success. I love that he gave the example about reading books, because if you have the luxury to read, read something that's going to fill your brain, improve your life. Before I started reading more difficult books, like the big one of Mastery or The Laws of Human Nature, these are big reads. I kind of thought I knew a lot. Turns out I think I was illiterate. When you start reading and informing yourself, the more you know, the more you grow. Number three, revert to a feeling of inferiority. Well, he says, what prevents people from learning, even something difficult as a new language, is not the subject itself. The human mind has limitless capabilities, but rather certain learning disabilities that tend to fester and grow in our minds as we get older. If we feel like we know something, our mind closes off to other possibilities. We see reflections of the truth we have already assumed. Such feelings of superiority are often unconscious and stem from a fear of what is different or unknown. We are rarely aware of this and often imagine ourselves to be paragons of impartiality. Children are generally free of these handicaps. Through learning, they can bridge the gap and not feel so helpless. Their minds are completely open. They pay greater attention. He says, understand, when you enter a new environment, your task is to learn and absorb as much as possible. For that purpose, you must try to revert to a childlike feeling of inferiority, the feeling that others know much more than you and that you are dependent upon them to learn and safely navigate your apprenticeship. You drop all of your preconceptions about an environment or field, any lingering feelings of smugness. You have no fears. Just like a child. I love that. Next is trust the process. What separates masters from others is often something surprisingly simple. Whenever we learn a skill, we frequently reach a point of frustration. What we are learning seems beyond our capabilities. Giving into these feelings, we unconsciously quit on ourselves before we actually give up. When it comes to mastering a skill, time is the magic ingredient. Assuming your practice proceeds at a steady level over days and weeks, certain elements of the skill become hardwired. Slowly, the entire skill becomes internalized, part of your nervous system. The mind is no longer mired in details, but can see the larger picture. It is a miraculous sensation, and practice will lead you to the point, no matter the talent level you were born with. The only real impediment to this is yourself and your emotions. Boredom, panic, frustration, insecurity. You cannot suppress such emotions. They are normal to the process and experienced by everyone, including masters. What you can do is have faith in the process. The boredom will go away once you enter the cycle. And that's why I mentioned the laws of human nature, is I have an entire episode just on mastering your emotional self. And it's not a quick fix, nothing is. But if that's where you're really struggling, I highly recommend you take a look. Number 5, move toward resistance and pain. That one sounds like a toughie. He says, by nature, we humans shrink from anything that seems possibly painful or overtly difficult. We bring this natural tendency to our practice of any skill. Once we grow adept at some aspect of this skill, generally one that comes more easily to us, we prefer to practice this element over and over. Our skill becomes lopsided as we avoid our weaknesses. Knowing that in our practice we can let down our guard, since we are not being watched or under pressure to perform, we bring to this a kind of dispersed attention. We tend to also be quite conventional in our practice routines. We generally follow what others have done, performing the accepted exercises for these skills. This is the path of amateurs. To attain mastery, you must adopt what we shall call resistance practice. The principle is simple. You go in the opposite direction of all your natural tendencies when it comes to practice. First, he says, you resist the temptation to be nice to yourself. You become your own worst critic. You see your work as if through the eyes of others. By doing this, you recognize your weaknesses, precisely the elements you are not good at. Give yourself arbitrary deadlines to meet, certain standards, constantly pushing yourself past perceived limits. In this way, you develop your own standards for excellence, generally higher than those of others. In the end, your 5 hours of intense focused work are the equivalent of 10 for most people. Soon enough, you will see the results of such practice, and others will marvel at the apparent ease in which you accomplish your deeds. So if you can do focused work, he talks about 5 hours, but you know, begin with an hour, half an hour, 20 minutes, carve a piece of time for yourself. You will see this come true. You will be able to do more work in less time with less effort than most people around you. Do the work, put it in there, because it will pay off in the long run. Okay, the next strategy is apprentice yourself in failure. Mistakes and failures are precisely your means of education. They tell you about your own inadequacies. It is hard to find out such things from people, as they are often political with their praise and criticism. Your failures also permit you to see the flaws of your ideas, which are only revealed in the execution of them. Think of it this way. There are two kinds of failure. The first comes from never trying out your ideas because you are afraid or because you are waiting for the perfect time. This kind of failure you can never learn from, and such timidity will destroy you. The second kind comes from a bold and venturesome spirit. If you fail in this way, the hit you take to your reputation is greatly outweighed by what you learn. Repeated failure will toughen your spirit and show you with absolute clarity how things must be done. In fact, it is a curse to have everything go right on your first attempt. You will fail to question the element of luck, making you think that you have a golden touch. When you do inevitably fail, it will confuse and demoralize you past the point of learning. In any case, to apprentice as an entrepreneur, you must act on your ideas as early as possible, exposing them to the public, a part of you even hoping that you fail. You have everything to gain. Yeah, you learn from your failures, but you don't want to repeat them. You do not want to make the same mistake twice. And Zig Ziglar always said, it's best to learn from others' mistakes. Yeah, that would be nice, but us humans seem to think we know what we're doing, right? Okay, here's the next strategy. Combine the how and the what. We humans live in two worlds. First, there's the outer world of appearances, all the forms of things that captivate our eye. But hidden from our view is another world, how these things actually function, their anatomy or composition, the parts working together and forming the whole. This second world is not so immediately captivating. It is harder to understand. It is not something visible to the eye, but only to the mind that glimpses the reality. But this how of things is just as poetic once we understand it. It contains the secret of life, of how things move and change. We live in a world of a sad separation that began some 500 years ago when art and science split apart. Scientists and technicians live in their own world, focusing mostly on the how of things. Others live in the world of appearances, using these things but not really understanding how they function. Just before this split occurred, it was the ideal of the Renaissance to combine these two forms of knowledge. Ha! And he says this is why the work of Leonardo da Vinci continues to fascinate us and why the Renaissance remains an ideal. This more rounded knowledge is, in fact, the way of the future, especially now that so much more information is available to us all. This should be part of our apprenticeship. How do things work? How do decisions get made? How does the group interact? Rounding our knowledge in this way will give us a deeper feel for reality and heightened power to alter it. Wow, that's exciting, don't you think? I love that. And then number 8, advance through trial and error. Avoid the trap of following one set career path. You are not sure where this will all lead, but you are taking full advantage of the openness of information, all the knowledge about skills now at our disposal. You see what kind of work suits you and what you want to avoid at all costs. You move by trial and error. This is how you pass your 20s. You are the programmer of this wide-ranging apprenticeship within the loose constraints of your personal interests. You are not wandering about because you are afraid of commitment, but because you are expanding your skill base and your possibilities. At a certain point, when you are ready to settle on something, ideas and opportunities will inevitably present themselves to you. When that happens, all of the skills you have accumulated will prove invaluable. You will be the master at combining them in ways that are unique and suited to your individuality. You settle on this one place or idea for several years, accumulating in the process even more skills. that move in a slightly different direction when the time is appropriate. In this new age, those who follow a rigid, singular path in their youth often find themselves in a career dead end in their 40s or overwhelmed with boredom. The wide-ranging apprenticeship of your 20s will yield the opposite, expanding possibilities as you get older. The how you do everything is the secret of life. But what about, do I really have to go through this? Aren't there some shortcuts I could take? Even the great masters, who people thought at one time were born with a magical gift, practiced and honed their skills and studied and researched. So, there are no shortcuts or ways to bypass the apprenticeship phase. It is the nature of the human brain to require such lengthy exposure to a field, which allows for complex skills to become deeply embedded and frees the mind up for real creative activity. The very desire to find shortcuts makes you eminently unsuited for any kind of mastery. There is no possible reversal to this process. And what he means by that is, at the end of each chapter, he does give a reversal or other take on whether it's possible there's other options. And we discussed that in the last chapter. So keep in mind, keep patient, and you will live a more inspired life, and you will master the universe, master yourself, and become what you are destined to be on this short time we have on this beautiful planet. Hit that subscribe button, and I will see you in the next chapter.